You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. We want to hear your text, your voicemails, and everything that you want to touch on as far as the Bulls go. Hit us up there, 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, with just a short intro here, we've got one of the most contentious interviews I think we've done. One of the most fiery guests we've had on, and this was a really good conversation. Like, shout out to C Red Fred, and that is who our guest is today.
I hope our listeners enjoy this interview. I think they will, because if you're a realist, a pessimist, or a believer, somewhere you're going to find commonality and common ground between either myself, Jordan, or Fred. And I think you know where those things kind of break down, where those narrative assignments break down. Fred, to his credit, and things did get heated a few times. Just for fair warning, make sure that your volume knob is not all the way turned up, because it only takes a few minutes for us to really get into it. Also, earmuffs if you got little ones around. Just a few scattered throughout the show because we got heated. But I love Fred, man. I mean, he is, if nothing else, a diehard fan of this team. And I know without a single doubt in my mind that he cares about this team as much as you and I care about this team. And we may have different opinions on everything from ownership all the way down to the dude sweeping the United Center floor at the end of the night. But the dude cares. And I appreciate and I respect that.
Without further ado, here is C Red Fred.
Right now, we are very pleased to welcome to Locked On Bulls for the first time. Brace yourselves, Bulls Nation. It's C Red Fred. You know him as the frequent caller into the Waddle and Sylvie show on ESPN 1000 here in Chicago. You can get his Bulls content and takes at ChicagoBullseye.com, including the Big Red Bus podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at your own risk at CBE Fred. Fred, how you doing, man? Welcome to the pod.
Guys, I'm living the dream. Living the dream. It's an honor to be on Locked On Bulls. I've been listening to you guys for a long time. I'm a huge fan. And I really enjoy what you do. It's a miracle. You guys can come up with content day after day and still make it entertaining to various degrees. But it's just a miracle what you guys do day after day. I love it, man.
Well, ready to talk to Bulls. We appreciate that, Fred. And whether or not we agree on takes across the board, we do it for fans like you who are as insanely passionate as we are. So that being said, let's hear it. Let's get it out of the way right now. Tell us why the Bulls are going to reclaim that regular season win record from the Warriors and go 74-8 this season.
74-8. Well, that's not happening. I think we all know.
Oh,
that.
Oh, wow. But okay. I do. All right. We're already making progress.
I've already had a mantra. My mantra is pretty much, and I think, I don't know if you guys heard this, 7th pick last year, 7th pick this year, seven seed this season, 7th title in 2020. That's my line, and I'm sticking to it. I just don't understand. I listen to a lot of your shows, and I know there was a guy who called up and said 40 wins. And, you know, you guys have said he was nuts or whatever. That's fine. And everybody's entitled to their opinion. I just don't understand what gets you so – why is it so impossible that the Bulls couldn't win 40-plus in an Eastern Conference that's a complete disaster? I think we can all agree there's 3 elite teams in Toronto, the Sixers, and Boston. I think they're on a tier by themselves, right? And then after that, I got a next 3 tier 2 with I'd say the Bucks, Indiana Pacers, and I'll even throw the Wizards in there, and who knows what's going to happen with those guys. But I challenge anyone to tell me, after that, at 7, the Bulls are really – are they that far behind anyone else in the East? What say you?
I think you look at the – you look at all the teams in the East, and while, like, people still want to talk about LeBron leaving the East and saying it's quote-unquote wide open, but you did just list about 4 or 5 teams that I think are staples at the top 5 of the East.
Six teams.
So you're talking about 2 spaces in the playoffs, and – let's talk about it. 6 teams that I think even yesterday's episode, I told Matt, I think the Bulls sit in a situation in the East where right now we haven't seen anything from any of these teams. We don't know what Detroit's going to be. We don't know what the Nets are going to be. We don't know what the Knicks are really going to look like. The Hornets and the Nets and then the Bulls, you've got 6 teams in the Eastern Conference for 2 spaces. And that goes without even talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers yet.
Or the Detroit Pistons, our other Central Division team, our other Central Division rival.
Let's jump in on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's just point that out. Let's line up the rosters of the Bulls and the rosters of the Cavs, all right? And pick the top 10 players in both rosters. I want to know who are the six. How do the Bulls not have the majority of the best players on both of those rosters? It's so easy to do. Look at every team. Look at the best player on the Bulls and the best player on the Cavs right now. Who's the best player in the Cavs?
Kevin Love.
Often injured, probably take him. I might take him ahead of Larry. I might. After that, isn't it not Bulls for the next 6 or 7 picks?
Well, okay. I mean, that's a fine argument to make, Fred. But I feel like the reason that you have that opinion is because you're vastly overestimating the value of individuals on this Bulls roster. I'm not going to argue you with Lauri Markkanen, because as you said, you listen to the show, you know that Jordan and I both have high hopes for Lauri as far as turning into like a perennial all-star kind of player. So whether or not you are giving him the advantage over Kevin Love, a perennial all-star already, well, we'll avoid that for now. But I think you overestimate the value of Zach LaVine, and I think you overestimate the value of Jabari Parker. Zach LaVine has yet to be a net positive in any of his NBA seasons. So why exactly does that like mean, oh, well, he's clearly better than most of the people on the Cavs roster. Dude hasn't had a net positive season.
He's played for net positive. That's these advanced statistics. I love that one. If you picked up Zach LaVine today and dropped him on Golden State, do you think he'd have a net positive? I mean, the big reason he's had a net negative is because his teams have sucked. He's played for nothing but lottery teams. And last year, yeah, he had a net negative. You know, he played, what, under 30 games, 27 games?
No. Fred, I'm talking about his teams have done net better with him off the court than with him on the court. That's what I'm talking about here.
Fair enough. Yes, so the team's getting blown out. Somebody else comes in. I mean, he still played the majority of minutes. When he was in Minnesota, he was playing an insanely amount of minutes per game. So I don't think you can make that judgment just that. I mean, it just flies in the face of logic that Zach LaVine wasn't a benefit to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, you could say, according to the stats, the team played better with him off the court. Maybe that's so. If that was true, I don't believe anybody would even consider giving him a $20 million contract. those stats are so dependent on the other. It's a team game. There's four other guys on the court. You can't just say, oh, Zach LaVine, yeah, the team was better without him. Well, that might depend on who was he starting? Maybe the bench played well at the end of a blowout of those lottery teams. I get your point. Hey, he hasn't shown it yet, right? Him and Parker both. But Parker played for a playoff team for those years. The team wasn't awful with him on the court. They weren't a terrible team, right? I mean, just to say that they were bad when Parker was on the court is not a true statement.
Yeah, I think go back to Zach LaVine real quick. I'm in the camp that I think Zach LaVine's still going to be borderline all-star, if not better than that. And while other people raise their eyebrows and say, well, can he play defense? Will he try on defense? That's the biggest hole there. And will he be consistent from the three? Like Zach LaVine, to me, he's going to be 24 years old, turning 24 this year. To me, a 24-year-old player who's had an ACL injury, basically just a combined of three seasons, I still think there's a lot of value there. But to me, you got to compare the rest of the roster. And I agree with you on that fact, too. But going back to the Cleveland Cavaliers, where this originally started, there are rosters and there are teams that are in the unknown in the Eastern Conference. I think I'm willing to put the Bulls right now in that conversation of six teams for two spots in the playoffs that are still kind of up for grabs.
But now, it's six teams for one spot because none of you mentioned the Miami Heat, and you know Spo's going to have them in the playoffs.
Come on. The Heat's roster is better than the Bulls. Is that I understand we want to give, you know, great deference to coaches like they do miracles. The Heat, they lost. I don't know if Wade's going to join the team. And regardless of what we think about Dwayne Wade, he did help them at some points last year, especially down the stretch. Who on the Heat would you rather have than Lauri Markkanen? Who on the Heat would you rather have than Jabari Parker? Who on the Heat would you rather have? I'd go with seven of the top 10 players. If you put both rosters together, I'd rather have anybody on the Heat. Talent wins. I agree with you. Spoelstra's a better coach. But talent in the long run wins. So Miami, yeah, feasted on all the bum teams last year. But this year, when teams are actually trying, I don't think they're going to be as good. And I think their team, aging group of guys, Dragic, he's over 30. All those guys aren't a downside. They're James Johnson. Really, they're better than the Bulls and more talented than the Bulls? I want to state this. Parker was criminally misused by Milwaukee. I've watched a ton of tape on this guy since we got him. I've never seen a worse example of wasting offensive talent. It's right up there with Tibbs' use of Korver while he was here. In his first two seasons, do you know Parker wasn't even allowed to shoot the three? He's the best player. The best player in Milwaukee was Giannis. And teams would pack the paint, prevent him from getting into the lane. And defense was almost wanting to encourage outside shooting against the Bucks, but they wouldn't allow Parker to shoot the three. He shot it at a 38% rate from last year. Not allowing him to shoot the three was catastrophic for his game. Big guys don't like guarding out to the three-point line. They prefer to hang around the rim and block shots and get rebounds. And the Bulls are going to be a nightmare for teams, for opposing fours and fives, is Markkanen and Parker. When Parker gets some minutes at the four, and Wendell Carter Jr., if they develop as three-point shooters like I think they can, those lanes are going to open up for LaVine and Dunn, and they can rim rock. It's going to be really good offensively.
Okay,
Fred,
I will give it to you that if Fred Hoiberg gives Jabari the green light to turn into more of a three-point shooter and take more shots behind the arc to keep the ball moving and to free up some space for the other pieces around him, I agree that we may see a more offensively efficient Jabari than anything we saw in Milwaukee. However, you just were immediately talking about Jabari playing minutes at the four. And the Bulls are telling us they're going to play him at the three. And this is a very long and heated ongoing debate that Jordan and I have been having about when it is exactly that if Fred is trying to play Jabari at the three and it's not going all that well, the front office comes to Fred and says, we got to find ways to play Jabari at the four. And how exactly does that interfere with the fact that Markkanen, your cornerstone, is already entrenched at the four. Your best bench piece, Bobby Portis, is a four. And you also just added Wendell Carter Jr. to your front court. So it seems great like point. You're already assuming it's fine that Jabari's going to split minutes between the three and the four. How do you deal with that now suddenly once again overcrowded Bulls front court?
Let's start with this. How many minutes do you think Markkanen should average per game?
28 to 32 a game.
I'd take the high end of that. If he averages less than 30 minutes per game, I'll be upset.
So let's say 32. Right there, 16 minutes per game is freed up at the power forward position. I want every one of those minutes to go to Parker on the second unit. So I want Parker to be the first guy out and then leading the second unit as the go-to scorer, bringing those other guys off the bench to kind of work around him. And every one of those minutes would be played at the four. There's also sometimes in a lot of lineups in the Eastern Conference, especially, where you can get away with playing Markkanen at the five and sliding Parker to the four. I do agree, hey, it's not his probably his best position, but the fact is in his best season, when he averaged over 20 points per game in 51 games before he blew out his ACL the second time, that season he played at the three almost a third of the time, 33% of the time. So his best season by far, he played a significant amount of minutes at the three.
Brett, I have no doubt. Just said that his best season, he played 33% at that spot, as opposed to the other two-thirds of the percent at his natural spot.
And I'm just telling you why I think he could probably play 50% at the four for us and 50% at the three. He will not have a problem, I'm telling you right now, in the offensive end at the three. Now, defensively, no doubt, there's going to be some issues in some games, you know, against tough matchups on the three. Again, I can't stress this enough. We're in the Eastern Conference. If you go up and down the rosters in the Eastern Conference, and for any listeners that haven't figured this out yet, that means we play 52 games in the East, 30 games in the West. 52 games in this god-awful conference that no longer has LeBron James in it. So, all right, I know we're all freaking out. How are we gonna handle this? Well, the good news is I remember asking the best defensive coach I ever had in high school, what position would you want to have the best defender at? And he said unequivocally it was at the center position. A great center can dominate the boards, clean up the mess of, and you know, anything that results from the bad perimeter defense. Interior defense always is more important than perimeter defense. But the second best position to have a defender is at the point guard position. So although I agree with you that the Bulls are lacking with defensive talent, the one bright spot here is their three best defenders, and that's Lopez and Wanda Carter Jr. and Dunn are at the three most important positions for defense. So that's another reason why I don't think it's absolutely insane. I'm not an idiot. The Bulls are not going to be a juggernaut defensively. But I don't think they're going to be historically awful. I think Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr. have first NBA all-defensive team potential. Wendell Carter Jr. won't make it this year. He's a rookie. But I think Dunn absolutely can. If he would have played five more games last year, he would have qualified for, I think, top five in steals in the NBA. Anyhow.
Brett, I'll give you this. You're way more convincing than some of our callers about winning 40-plus games, and I give you a ton of credit for that. I don't know if I'm there yet with you, and I've told our callers and our texters a million times that I don't think I can get to that point yet. I guess my question for you then, and for all the Bulls fans out there listening, 40-plus games, what's one key factor as far as this roster goes, and what needs to happen, especially early on in the season? What needs to happen in order for them to stay on that timeline? If we get to the back end of December and the Bulls are 10, 12, 15 games under 500, you might be steering clear towards a top five, top seven lottery pick again next season. So what do they have to do in the first 2 months? What's the most important thing for this Bulls team to do in the first 2 months, first 3 months of the season in order to stay on that 40-plus win path? All right, before we get back to more See Red Fred, just want to remind you, King's Dining and Entertainment, 1500 North Clybourne Avenue in Lincoln Park, our home for Bowling with Bobby Portis. It should be your football headquarters as well, all season long. A 220-foot bar, full-service restaurant, and over 50 HD TVs all around the place. Not to mention the 16 lanes, 4 billiards tables, air hockey, darts, and more. That's King's Dining and Entertainment in Lincoln Park. Now back to See Red Fred.
So great question. I'm going to point to what happened last year as an illustration of what they need to do this year. Number one, the team started out 3-20 last year, right? What everybody talked about, Nico, what everybody forgets is Portis, another key rotation player, missed the first 8 games due to the incident, and Dunn missed the first 4 games. And not only did Dunn miss the first 4 games, but Hoiberg, for some dumb reason, didn't play him almost for the entire first month. So the Bulls go on their Western Conference trip and get slaughtered for like 8 straight games. And when Nico came back, the schedule just started to get a little bit better and they went back to the Eastern Conference. So yeah, Nico played great, but everybody's rewriting history like, oh my God, what a great job by Nico Maricich. He single-handedly won us those games. No, no. We were playing much better before Nico came back. We had a 1-point loss at Denver that we should have never lost. We had a 1-point loss at Indiana. We should have never lost. Dunn was playing extremely high level. And then Nico came back, and the delta between him and a bum like Paul Zipser is huge. So, yeah, we're going to go on a run. But what we have to avoid is having three injuries to rotation players. That's number one. We can't start the season like that. I do think the Bulls are extremely deep. They can get by an injury in the front court quite easily. But if they get an injury to Dunn, we're going to be in big trouble, because I think that the delta between him and anyone else at the point guard position is massive, especially on the defensive end. So the stats that you look at last year, the Bulls were 21-31 against the East. They were 6-24 against the West. They had one of the worst records in the Eastern Conference. It was the worst record in the Eastern Conference versus the West. The next worst team was the Nets. And the only team that had a worse record, interconference record, believe it or not, was Memphis, who only won 4 games against the East. So my point is, it's going to be next to impossible to repeat that again. By adding Parker, the team's better, and you're actually, I don't know, trying to win. To expect the Bulls to win only 6 games against the West again, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the odds are infinitesimal that that will happen. So all you got to do is win 10 games. You got to go 10-20 against the West, and, you know, 30 and 22 against the East, and then you got it. You got 40 wins.
Fred, I see this argument you're trying to make as far as the strength and weakness of the different conferences and how many games the Bulls are playing against these teams. But, I mean, you mentioned Memphis. Memphis is one of multiple teams who, like the Bulls, will not be tanking this time around. They added Jaren Jackson Jr. They are expecting to get a healthy Mike Conley back. They still haven't traded the younger Gasol brother, Mark. Phoenix Suns, I still think they're going to be bad, but they're not going to be purposefully tanking. The Dallas Mavericks with Luka, now with Dennis Smith Jr. in that backcourt, they're not going to be tanking. Like, I think you're underestimating that there were so many. The Bulls were one of 9 or 10 tanking teams last season. That will not be the case this time around. So the Bulls didn't succeed at losing those games to some of the other teams that they were chasing, you know, downward, like, you know, winning late season games against teams like Memphis and Dallas. This time around, if what they're trying to do is win games, they are going to be doing so against fewer opponents who are trying to lose games.
Not necessarily. So, for example, let's say, look at Memphis. Memphis wasn't trying to tank when the season started. They lost Conley, and then they decided to put it in that motion. Just because those teams, to assume that there aren't going to be as many tanking teams, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. I don't know. In fact, there could be more teams now with the adjusted lottery balls. As the season goes near the end, maybe there's some teams that are like, you know what, we do want to tank. We want to go for this. We're in position to potentially get a high draft pick, even if we get to the 8th, 9th, or 10th spot. So I don't know if that's true. I suspect you're right on that, Matt, but I don't know if it's true. But I would rather point – I'd like to point out, you made a good point about Memphis. No doubt they're going to be a lot better. Dallas will be a lot better. But it doesn't matter. The Cavs were the team that are in the Eastern Conference that we play many more times. We only play each Western Conference team – you know, one away, one at home. The Cavs are a team we're going to play a lot more often. And guess what? LeBron's on that team. I think we're going to do a lot better against that team. I mean, to me, like, we lost almost every Raptors game anyhow. The teams that improved in the East, I think the Raptors are going to be better, depending on how Leonard is. Obviously, the Celtics are good. Sixers? Yeah, maybe. I mean, they lost it to Bellinelli, hit a lot of big shots for them. I wasn't really impressed with what they did around their two big guys. You know, I guess a lot depends how Fultz comes back. Like, I just go up and down Eastern Conference. There's literally no team that scares me. And just to assume I just don't understand, like, this general attitude around the fan base that, oh, my God, we're going to suck again. We're going to be terrible. I don't see that. I don't see it at all. And if we do suck again, Fred should go, because this team has so much offensive talent that finally, hey, here you are, Fred. I understand his complaints before, like, we didn't have enough three-point shooting. Parker hit it at 38% level last year. The best team in the NBA last year, the Golden State Warriors, shot it at 38%. The worst team shot it at 33%. So we're talking about 5 percentage points from best to worst. The Bulls now have Valentine, Parker, Levine shot it at a 38% for Minnesota, they have 3-point shooting talent that can extend the floor and run his offense. Let's see what he can do. You know, I don't have a ton of faith in Fred, but I don't think it's a dire situation I'm going to lose sleep over. I think the East is terrible. I think Orlando's awful.
I think that, to be honest with you, you're bringing up some good points. I will give you that. But the thing is, it's like when you're talking about teams that are bad and whether or not this team is going to be bad next year, I think can be on a sliding scale. And it depends on what you're looking for this season. That's why I think I go back to every time a texter brings up 40 plus wins, playoff spot. That's what we need to do. If we don't do that, it's a terrible season. You don't want to watch this team tank. Nobody wants to watch this team tank. I understand that. But if the Bulls only get to a 5-win increase from last year, if they get to 33 wins, but you see some stuff, you see some development from Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn look like actual future pieces. And those three core guys, you're like, okay, we're ready to go. We saw some improvement from those guys. Wendell Carter Jr. doesn't look like a rookie. That'll be a plus. And whatever Jabari Parker gives you this season, I think is gravy. I think people are putting more pressure on Jabari Parker and the importance of his role on this team than instead of just looking at the outside pieces that are going to be here long term. Markkanen, LaVine, Carter for the three of those guys, and then Dunn too. I would expect him to be around. So I think it's all a sliding scale as far as what your expectations are going into the season, whether or not it's quote unquote going to be a bad season. But I want to get to some other stuff. So we got your answer. So I think what I can take away from what you're saying is health is number one importance. And the other one is just trying to beat your own schedule, beating teams within your conference and some of those unknown teams, the six teams that we listed off in the Eastern Conference. When you go up against those teams, those are games that you have to win. So going 30 and 22 in the Eastern Conference and 10-20 in the Western Conference will be good enough to get you 40 wins. So those are go ahead.
Well, hold on really quick. The one thing I would disagree with what you just said there is health. Like I keep on hearing that if the Bulls stay healthy, if they can easily handle an injury to the front court. In fact, that might solve a lot of problems. I'm not saying to expect that or you should ever count on that, but the Bulls have far more depth at the 4 and 5 than any team in arguably in the East. It's the position. If it's an injury to Dunn, that's devastating to me because he is clearly, he cannot have a season like he did last year where he missed so many games. I mean, we always forget. One of the highlights of the Bulls season is they just beat him. I think it was they beat Toronto and they beat Miami back to back, and they're doing great against Golden State. He falls on his face, and everybody forgets we lost the next 7 to 8 games. We weren't even in those games. And Dunn is such a good defender, and he raises, I think, the quality of our defense just immeasurably when he's out in the court. That losing him would be just devastating. So I don't want to say that we're, you know, I believe you could point to any team. You could look at how do you think Milwaukee's going to be if Giannis goes down, right? It's a position. Like our best player to me is Markkanen, but if we, God forbid, suffer an injury to Lauri, that's one area where we have plenty of depth where we can have somebody like Portis, our quality player, step up. It's done that we can't afford losing.
Health has to be a main word on this team, though. You've got a guy that's got recovering from one ACL, and you've got another guy that has had two torn ACLs. So I think health definitely has to be a factor here. But okay, let's get to some other stuff here because I want to talk about other things other than 40-plus wins. So another topic, too. Let's get to the front office. Where do you sit, John Paxson, Gar Foreman? The rankings Bleacher Report made, me and Matt had done an episode about a week and a half ago, talking about these rankings, where the Bulls sit. And I believe what Bleacher Report had put it out that they are 24th in the league. Were you sitting out with the front office? Did you like this rebuild? Do you like where it's at on track? Obviously, you do. What do you think about the front office overall in these rankings?
Well, I mean, I know this is what's made me immensely popular, unpopular in Bulls Nation. I'm definitely out of step here with the majority of thought that, you know, John Paxson in our front office is just completely incompetent. I think it's utterly ridiculous. It really is. If you look at just on their quality of draft picks, they've had 8 top 10 draft picks in their history. They've hit on 7 of them. And we always hear about St. Hinkie. Everybody's talking about St. Hinkie. St. Hinkie drafted Noel. He was the only GM to draft 2 guys ahead of Giannis. Took Noel ahead of him. He took Michael Carter-Williams. And he also struck out on taking Okafor ahead of Porzingis. He's had 3 top 10 picks, and he missed on 2 of them. So he's betting 33%. Like, it's insane. The 2 best picks, arguably, in the last decade in terms of value was Jimmy Butler at 30 Green in the second round for Golden State. So just those 2 picks would make some front offices. And the idea that this front office is so incompetent, I understand the frustration, believe me. believe me, I do get it. But the reason that when you look at the big picture here, the reason that you should be frustrated is because we had not one, but two core players of a title contending team, and either in the start of their 5-year deal or in the middle of their 5-year deal, declined to a level that's unheard of in NBA history. I can't name a team that had, you look what happened to Rose. Obviously he missed two full seasons and never approached what he was. But people talk about that all the time. People don't talk about Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah was first team All NBA in 2014.
Fourth place MVP year later, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And a year later, he's in the playoffs going for, he was a 75% free throw shooter up until March of 2015. Over the course of the next 30 days, he started shooting 35% in the playoffs. He was an absolute joke offensively. If you go watch some of those tapes in that Cleveland series, that team won 50 games, the Bulls, that year. That was not a bad team. Gasol was rock solid that year. That was the first year after they signed him. Butler, Rose actually played pretty well that season. And then the problem was Joakim Noah just falling off the cliff on the offensive end. Nobody was guarding him. So not only one, but two core players declined immensely to the point you couldn't even really trade them. So I understand the frustration, but if you all step back, if you guys didn't criticize giving Rose a max deal and then giving Noah an almost max deal, suddenly you got, for 5 years or 4 years to 5 years, you got two guys taking up large percentages of your cap who resorted to barely in the NBA level. In Noah's case, he might be out of the league. So I understand the frustration. Let's go to the Bleacher Report, though. So I start getting 1,000 emails. Fred, look at this. I told you. Told me what? Some dope named Grant Hughes writes an article for the Bleacher Report. This guy lives in San Francisco. As far as I can tell, he was an attorney to 2012, and he decides to rank the front offices. Okay, fine. I'll take a look at his rankings. He had the Orlando Magic ranked number 23 ahead of the Bulls. There is no objective measure by which you can come to that conclusion. Orlando has had a worse record than the Bulls for almost a decade. They picked ahead of the Bulls every year for almost a decade. Last year, they took Jonathan Isaac ahead of Markkanen. Laurie was first-team all-rookie. Isaac wasn't. Now, I understand he was hurt. All right, fine. You ask 30 NBA teams who you'd rather have, the vast majority would say Laurie Markkanen. 2015, the Bulls took Portis. Orlando took Huizenga at 5. Where's he at? How's Portis doing? I mean, it's insane that anybody would – what free agent am I missing? The Orlando Magic are going to probably start jeering Grant at point guard. And yet he's got their front office ranked ahead of the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, let's not forget some of the mistakes. Let's not forget some of the mistakes the Magic had made, like trading Victor Oladipo before they should have.
I mean, but as Fred pointed out, this is just some random, Bleacher Report bystander and some random objective rankings. But Fred, my counter is that earlier in the 17-18 season, while it was still going on, ESPN released their rankings, and not the ESPN NBA experts, but they polled the front office members across the league and had them rank each other. And in that ranking, the Bulls were even worse. I think instead of 24th, they were like 28th or 29th. So it's not like it was just like some random schmo at Bleacher Report who thinks this Bulls front office is wonk. Other front offices across the league think that they have struggled recently. And look, I'm going to jump in right here. I am with you on the matter of their draft picks and that they have far more hits than misses, especially finding studs deep in the first round and hitting on their top 10 picks. And because of just that, I have somehow garnered like the Garpax defender of this show, which I am not in any sense. I will quickly point out their other mistakes. I'm just saying, yes, I'm with you on the fact that most of the hashtag FireGarPaxers who don't have half a brain inside their head refuse to pay attention to the things they do well, including, as you mentioned, hit on draft picks. But some of the trades, some of the free agent signings, that is where we take issue.
Okay, let's start here. Let's just break this down, because I try to think logically. I know you guys do too. Let's think logically, not with feeling. But what do you think the number one reason is that the front office is hated by the vast majority of fans in this town?
Because they make a lot of boneheaded, head-scratching decisions. They are so failingly not transparent.
It's
the fact that they treat their fan base like they're stupid.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
John Paxson does not treat his fan base like this. That's one thing. Let's take a step back here. John Paxson bled for the Chicago Bulls. Matt, you're older than I'm older than most people listening to this. Most of the millennials here, you know, don't remember 1998.
I remember the old days. I remember Paxson for three. He John Paxson, three. I remember.
He helped win three titles. He was a coach on the 72 win team.
Remember that,
and he was
too.
An announcer for the rest of the years. And
that gives him job
Trout.
Security for the rest of his life as a front office
VP? No, what gives him job security is his performance on the job. We've had two losing seasons since 2004. That's what gives him job security. Right. Let's take another step back. What objective measure would you judge a front office by? What's the
In Chicago?
No, any front office. No.
Not any. This is the third largest market team in the NBA. This is a city and a franchise whose fan base expects championships. Yeah, you can call us spoiled. You can call us spoiled for the 90s, but no, I'm sorry. First and second round playoff exits is not enough to get it done for this fan base. And this fan base, you talk about Paxson bleeding for the team. This fan base throws their money at this team, even if they stink.
That's fair enough. Yeah, no doubt. A lot of them do. A lot of them support the team very well. A lot of them just waste their money in throwing up billboards instead of using it for other good causes.
Thank you. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe we agree on that. There we go. So, waste the money.
You know, let me. Here's what I think you should judge a front office on. Two things. Number one, titles. In the last decade, Golden State has three. There's only six teams that have won titles in the last 10 years. Golden State, Cleveland, Miami, Dallas, the Lakers, and Boston. That's it. So what's the second thing? I'd say wins. Winning percentage. Because the Bulls, believe it or not, I know everybody's going to laugh here. I think in 2012, the Bulls had a title-ready team. I know it's kind of hard to look here and say, oh, my God,
so,
more wins.
What, so LeBron saying, and the Heatles were abducted by the aliens from Space Jam? What happened?
Oh, maybe you missed it. Maybe you missed it in 2011 when Dirk Nowitzki embarrassed LeBron in the same team. Like suddenly LeBron, it's easy for us now to look back and say it, but in 2012, there were all these doubts about LeBron. He didn't win the title yet. He had just lost with a better team to Dirk Nowitzki.
No, Fred. The 2012 Heat were better than the 2011 Heat.
Why?
They were. Why?
No, they didn't have a better record than Chicago. Well, the Bulls were better in 2012. They had Rip Hamilton instead of
Rip Hamilton was a gigantic piece of money and completely useless.
All right,
they
hold
had
on.
Jimmy Butler.
Let's step back.
My second point was we're getting off on something here. If you don't believe the Bulls had a title team, we can at least agree that they built a title contender. Can you agree there? They were content. They were the biggest threat.
100%.
They were the biggest threat to LeBron's, ascendancy in the East. They built the biggest threat to that, and it was robbed of us by a catastrophic injury and Noah's injury and an idiot coach. So that's what caused it. So in the last decade, only. Take a guess how many teams have a better record than the Bulls, winning percentage-wise. Seven. The Spurs, the Oklahoma City, Houston, Miami, Golden State, Boston, Portland.
Yeah, and most of that, Fred, goes back to the years that were under the helm of that quote-unquote idiot coach you just referred to.
No, it doesn't. Well, he was an idiot coach, and let me explain why. All right? Strike shortened season of 2011-12. I'm going to get into this. We're going to get into it right now. On January 10th, 2012, Derrick Rose played 41 minutes. The next day, he was in a walking boot.
No, stop, Fred. We're not having the minutes debate on this show. No, stop. Okay. No.
All right, we're not going to have the minutes debate. Fine.
Stop.
Let's go back to the original conversation here, okay? You brought up a couple points, and I think both of you are going back and forth about the front office, and I don't really think this is about them. This isn't about John Paxson or Gar Foreman at the end of the day. If you're saying who they're really upset with, you should be upset with Jerry Reinsdorf and the way this has kind of been operated. In the last handful of years, sometimes they're forced to the hand. They have to do what Reinsdorf says because ultimately he owns the team. He's the one spending the money. So the Bulls are the ones sitting here saying, we'll spend the money. The front office will. And they're not allowed to do that. Sometimes you have to make changes. I think the one biggest thing that Matt hit on that I would say is frustrates me the most about them, and this has changed a little bit since we've hit the rebuild button about 14 months ago, is the transparency from the front office to the fan base. That was the most irritating thing I think about any Bulls fan out there could agree with me that the front office not being transparent with the fans and telling us that you're going to get younger and more athletic and then signing Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo was two of the biggest idiotic moves, and they lost a ton of respect for that.
First of all, they have become younger and more. Let's go back to that then. We want to talk about that. 2016 was the first year that the Bulls could have built around Jimmy Butler. Before that, they had the albatross of the Noah contract. They had the albatross of the Rose contract. They somehow managed to hoodwink the Knicks in order to give them a valuable player in Lopez. And then they take – so 2016, you go into that season. Now, if you look at the barrage of 3- and 4-year contracts that were signed in 2006, I have emails from people. The Bulls were dumb not to sign Evan Fournier. Rockets signed Ryan Anderson. Why didn't the Bulls sign him? I can name about
I know the point you're making, Fred, and you're not going to hear a disagreement from either Jordan or I. Yeah, a lot of other teams that weren't the Bulls made long, dumb, bad contracts in the summer of 16, and the Bulls were quote-unquote strict with themselves, and the contracts they signed to Wade and Rondo were not long-term commitments. That's the argument you're about to make. Guess what? Just because they were short-term commitments doesn't mean they were a good idea. They were a fucking stupid idea.
Guess what? If his name wasn't Dwayne Wade, he averaged 18 points in 29 minutes per game. He had a PER of 18 that season. And believe it or not, Kirk Heinrich, who people want to build a statue for, never his highest PER ever was 17. So I'm trying to put it in perspective here. Kyrie Irving was the only
Kirk
guy.
Kirk Heinrich was never a Hall of Famer or was asked to be a Hall of Famer by this
franchise. And neither was Dwayne Wade at the elderly age of 36 or whatever
Didn't play a lick of defense and fractured the locker room. That is all Dwayne Wade accomplished.
No. Hold on a second. No, it didn't. Jimmy wanted Dwayne Wade. Jimmy said, all these other teams are signing 4- and 3-4-year guys. You got to do this for me. So Paxton did not wanted to go with a rebuild. He wanted to go with a full rebuild. But they were able to convince him, you know what? We'll give it a try. You want Dwayne Wade, we're going to sign Dwayne Wade. And he didn't. How we've rewritten that season is amazing to me. Like, 18 points per game and 29.9 minutes per game. If that was anybody else besides Dwayne Wade, we'd be celebrating. But it was Dwayne Wade, and yeah, he wasn't as good as he was before. He wasn't awful across the 60 games. And the plan worked. Guess what? We're up 2 games on Boston. I was in Boston.
The plan did not work in Boston. Get out of here.
That was some of the best times of my life in a Boston bar. Hearing all these, the number one seed Celtics freaking out.
Cool.
The Bulls
pounded. I'm glad you had a good time at a bar in Boston, Fred, when the Bulls upset the Celtics in a first round series that they ultimately got swept out.
It wasn't a great move. Why isn't it a great move? It worked.
It did not work.
Dwayne Wade
robbed this organization blind and then ditched after a year.
No, he didn't. He did a lot of great stuff off the court. I'm not going to get into all the stuff he did off the court. He was fantastic in the community. And yeah, it didn't work out. The team sucked because why? Nico, of course, shot 29% from three.
2 seconds ago, you said it worked, and now you're admitting that it didn't work.
No, I didn't. Well, they didn't win a lot of games in the regular season. It wasn't because of Wade and Jimmy. It was because of Nico Mirotic, who was the key to that team because he was one of the few guys that could hit the three, shot 29% for his first 200 three-point attempts. And that's what they needed to spread the floor. He sucked, and that was a big reason that the Bulls were terrible. And they tried to go with a rebuild. They made the trade to go with the rebuild by getting rid of Taj McDermott. And what happened to Nico wakes up. They make the playoffs. They're up 2-0. And then Jimmy had a horrible game 3, and they lose. And Rondo got hurt.
Rondo broke his finger, and that was the end of that.
Jordan, jump in here.
Let's rein it all back in because you're arguing about stuff that's happened in the past. It doesn't matter anymore at this point. The one thing I will say about Dwayne Wade, I get the off-the-court stuff, the things that he did for the city. I get that. But it was also partially on Dwayne Wade, too, because he was salty that Miami didn't pay him. And so he went somewhere else to stab Pat Riley and say, you know what, middle fingers to you. I'm going to go get my money. And that was a bad effect for us as Bulls fans because that wasn't fair to us. We were like, okay, younger and more athletic, and then 36-year-old Dwayne Wade. And then on top of all of that, would you agree with Matt and I, because we both feel the same way, that he turned Jimmy into something that we didn't necessarily want or need and see that he could lead a team. He isolated himself with Dwayne Wade.
No, I don't agree with that. The year before, Jimmy Butler just hammered Derrick Rose. Are we forgetting about the season before that with all the nonsense that we had to put up with Jimmy criticizing his players? I hate to say it. I love Jimmy Butler. I love Jimmy Butler, but you know, he's not a great leader. You know what I'm saying? I mean, look, we went to Minnesota. They have just as much, arguably more talent than anybody in the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference. They're an extremely talented team. What did they do? They crawled in the playoffs at the eighth spot and they won one game. I'm seeing a pattern here. Everywhere he's going, there's a problem. He's just not a great leader. And to blame it on Wade.
No. It's not all on Wade.
But he was a factor.
They sold Wade as, oh, great veteran leader, going to come in and help the young guys. No, all he did was fracture the locker room and then take Jimmy under his wing to say, you're my Marquette boy, you're my friend. Let's call out all these young kids because they suck and we don't. That is all that
Jimmy fractured also, the locker room.
Well, I was just going to say, your narrative is also incorrect that you were talking about earlier, how you said Jimmy told the front office to go and get Dwayne Wade, and that's why they gave this another shot before the rebuild. That's just flat wrong, Fred. No. Dwayne Wade Jimmy was trying to. No. Fred, let me finish.
Go ahead.
Dwayne Wade was trying to leverage with Miami, as Jordan just pointed out. He has since admitted that the conversation went like this. Well, I could go play in Chicago, but I'm not sure if Butler would want me there because that's Jimmy's team now. And his wife, Gabrielle Union, said, call Jimmy and ask him. So D-Wade calls Jimmy and says, hey, what if I come play with you with the Bulls? What is Jimmy going to say? No. The dude who he's looked up to since he came into Marquette after D-Wade was a Marquette legend, a three-time NBA champion who Jimmy has recently become an even closer friend with. What's he going to say? No, I don't want your old sorry ass. Jimmy was put into uncomfortable position today. Okay, sure. Come play over here, Wade. We'll have some fun. Maybe we'll win a playoff game or two. The front office, meanwhile, saw dollar signs. Wade jerseys everywhere through this city. Ticket sales at the Madhouse. You cannot put Wade's arrival on Jimmy Butler over the front office. That is ridiculous.
What you just described had nothing to do with the front office. Gabriel Union called Jimmy. Where does the Bulls front office come here?
Yeah, I got you.
Where they come is when yes. Wade calls them, they say, yeah, Wade, come on in. We'll give you $60 million.
It wasn't $60 million that they ended up paying him. But that said, Jimmy Butler wanted Dwayne Wade. That is a fact. And he would not have been happy if it came apparent that the Bulls passed on Dwayne Wade. Are you going to argue that? Do you think Jimmy Butler would have been happy if the Bulls passed on Dwayne Wade?
Yeah, it was his team.
Are you wrong? Ask Jimmy. Next time you run into Jimmy, ask him, hey, Jimmy, if the Bulls would have passed on Wade, would you have been happy about that? What do you think he's going to say? F no.
Fred, bottom line. Who's making the player personnel decisions in the summer? Is it Jimmy or is it the front office?
Oh, God.
Because it's the front office.
What front office saw Wade as a cash
cow? They saw Wade as a cash cow, and that's why they signed him.
You guys are arguing about something.
Hold on a second. The Bulls were already number one in attendance. Cash cow. If Wade didn't come here, we're not going to be number one in attendance. We've been number one since 2010.
No, Fred, do your homework. Those numbers have been steadily dropping for the last 6 or 7 years.
Who has led the NBA in attendance for the last 10 years? Who has led the NBA in attendance, number one, for the last 10 years?
Probably since Chicago. It's probably not going to be Chicago for long, but still,
it's been the Bulls every year, even in the year you're talking about. Even the 41-41 team, the previous team before that everybody hated, that didn't make the playoffs, everybody was down on.
When there were not a whole lot of butts and seats.
The Bulls had to get Wade to sell tickets is insane. Hey, it really is.
You know that tickets sold and butts and seats are a different thing, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Because there was
organization, why would it matter? Why would it matter?
Because there was no positive vibe around this team.
I'd rather have the money.
They saw Wade as a cash cow, and if you can't see that, you're friggin' blind.
Okay. Yeah, they also saw him as a guy who just performed extremely well in the playoffs, who's a legend, and he also could have lessened that stupid ongoing narrative that the Bulls can't sign any big time free agents. So
that's what it was with too. They overpaid another vet past his prime.
For
1 year that he shouldn't have been here, 1.5 years that he shouldn't have gotten paid.
Stupid to have this argument now. We're 2 years out from this entire situation, and it doesn't even go back to the main point we were trying to talk about, was what the negative narrative was around the front office.
Yeah, but the Wade and Rondo signings tie directly into that. That's the point.
So what's funny is you're both arguing different points, but it's coming to basically the same point. One is that I don't disagree with you that Jimmy Butler played a factor into it. But look, the Bulls didn't treat him right either. let's be honest here, telling your star top 15 player that you're going to build around or build with him, not around him. Like, what the fuck does that mean? So to me, like, they didn't treat Jimmy Butler right. And in that fact, I can sympathize with Jimmy Butler in that sense, because he wanted to get paid a max contract. And the Bulls said, you know what? We don't feel like you're the star, the guy that we can build around. Fine. He was salty about that.
Well,
I get
that was the right decision.
Right. Totally. 100%. Yes, that was the right decision at that point. You're not going to pay a Jimmy Butler with all those miles on his knees. We get that. That is clear.
How did Danny Ainge treat Isaiah Thomas? Was it better or worse than the Bulls treated Jimmy Butler? Who cares? Like, honestly, what we treated Jimmy Butler terrible? No, we didn't. We treated Jimmy Butler fine. He
the
made
fans
a lot of money
didn't
here.
Treat
He's
him
great
bad.
Player.
No. The fans
Hold on a second. Yeah, the fans didn't treat him bad. I'm talking about the front office. Let's compare how Danny Ainge treated Isaiah Thomas and compare how the Bulls treated Jimmy Butler. What's worse? I'm not. I don't believe this idea that the Bulls treated Jimmy Butler terrible. They decided they had to go in another direction because of an extremely disappointing season where Jimmy failed many times in leadership. I don't think that's debatable. I don't think the team they put around him also. Let's look at that team. Dwayne Wade, Rondo, Nico. Nico and Lopez. Is that
now
any,
here you are,
how
Fred.
Is that any different? Hey, Matt, how's that any different than what the Lakers just put around
you
LeBron?
You were just defending.
LeBron, Rondo.
You were just defending the fact that Wade was a useful player, and now here you are saying, well, it's not Jimmy's fault. Look at what they put around him. You are so two-faced, it's hilarious.
No, I didn't. What are you talking about? My point is, I don't think the team that the Bulls put around Jimmy Butler was terrible. I just said it. Nico, I don't think Nico was a terrible player. He played awful that season, but I don't think Jimmy did a great job in the leadership role. I don't. So I might be crazy on that. And then they traded him, which is in a perfect right to do so. And then that's another reason the front office hates them. The reason the fans hate the Bulls front office is primarily for two things. Number one, the firing of Tom Thibodeau, which was completely justified and will be proven the right decision in the long run. And number two, the trading of Jimmy Butler. Those two things, everybody's had it with the front office. But it doesn't matter, because if they keep on drafting like they did in the last 2 years, the last top 10 picks, four top 10 picks have been Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. I'm pretty happy with those results.
So you're half right there, at least in my opinion. You're right about the Tom Thibodeau thing. People were angry about that. But I think it more so goes back to the fact that they had Fred Hoiberg 2 years in the running, 2 years in the making to basically sit in that seat as the next head coach. And that wasn't fair to Tom, and that wasn't fair to Fred Hoiberg either. And it's still not fair to Fred Hoiberg at this point. So I get that from that standpoint, but I don't think it's necessarily because they kicked Tom Thibodeau. It's the way they went about it that pissed fans off. And that you already had a coach basically in place while Tom Thibodeau was still out there coaching the Bulls. And another thing, too,
well, they tried to help Tom.
The transparency of the fan base, I think, goes without saying. Like, the fact that you come to the fan base and you're not real with the fans on what you're doing and what your direction is over those 2 years where Jimmy was here, Dwayne was here, Rajon Rondo was here, and all the little storylines that came out from that. That's why I think the front office got so much shit and lost so much respect for themselves. Now, let's go to present tense here. Let's go to since we traded Jimmy Butler, since we decided to rebuild. For the most part, Gar Forman not being the spokesman to the media, that's been the best thing in the world for the Bulls. And they've been, for the most part, transparent with the fan base on what they're going to do, what their plan is.
Other
it's a
than,
little sidestep.
Other than doing their draft recap press conference while the draft was still happening. Right. That was a bad look. But other than that, since the rebuild, why was that a bad look?
Yeah, why?
They didn't
second round pick.
Look at
here
the
we
second
go.
Round.
Here we go. Oh, we needed another second round pick. No, I don't care how things look. Wait, second round picks. What second round? We didn't have any. I didn't. They already had almost all the roster spots already taken, and people they just looked for reasons to criticize the front office. It doesn't matter. Well, they came out and they talked. Well, yeah, some of the writers weren't happy about the way things were handled in the past. They wanted to get that out because they weren't going to make any more moves. I had no problem with that. Who cares? Second-round picks don't win titles. You can count for every Draymond Green, there are 200 guys that don't make an NBA roster in the second round. I don't care if you trade every second round pick for the rest of my life.
And they were so set on getting to work with Wendell and Chandler that very night that they wanted to get their press conference over with instead of staying in their draft room and maybe taking or receiving a couple of phone calls. That is a cutting corners kind of thing that is what Jordan and I are alluding to when it comes to the way that this front office portrays themselves to the media and the fan base. Don't give me that. Well, whatever. They didn't have a pick. Who cares? No, the reason it looks bad is because it makes them look lazy and it makes them look like they don't care about their jobs.
I don't believe that. I think that statement's ridiculous.
I'll
say it right now. John Paxson doesn't care. Do you really believe that? John Paxson doesn't care. John Paxson is one of the most competent executives in this league.
Oh.
It's so hilarious. I'm not talking about Gar. Gar is a whole other story, right? I'm talking about John Paxson. I've talked to pros who've dealt with John Paxson. Ask Taj Gibson what he thinks of John Paxson.
No, Fred, I'm not arguing with you that he cares or that Gar. I've said this on this show a million times. The front office cares precisely dick about what the fan base thinks of them, which is why I thought that the billboard was stupid and a waste of money. They don't care. The Reinsdorfs don't care. They trust each other.
Do you want them to care?
No,
do you want them to care?
What I'm explaining is the perception that the fan base has and why.
Let me explain something.
Examples like that are why. And yeah, as a fan, I would like it if they at least made an effort to look like they give a damn about that kind of stuff.
If they cared about what the fans thought, we'd still have Joakim Noah on this team. Because the vast majority, nobody will admit
No.
The vast majority of emails I took were, hey, we're letting Joakim Noah go. He's the heart and soul of this team. Yeah, they realized he was done. I don't care what they think about. You know how many times I've disagreed with moves of this front office? I was so upset when they drafted Taj Gibson. I couldn't believe this Taj Gibson. I was so upset. Taj Gibson went in the 20s, one of the best picks in the history of the Chicago Bulls. I was so upset when they drafted Lauri Markkanen. I wanted Malik Monk. I was at Doug Tonis's draft party screaming, I can't believe they did this. Well, how did that turn out? I mean, they've corrected me on so many things. I don't care what they think. In fact, I don't even want them thinking what the fans think because the fans are wrong more often than not. And I go back to 2016. I took emails on all these guys. We got to get Chandler. It was insane some of the horrible deals signed that year. And they passed on every one. And those were the right decisions. Majority, yeah, they make mistakes. Of course they do. But the vast majority of their moves have been rock solid compared to any of these other horrific franchises. Certainly Orlando. Number 23, give me a break.
You got to change your email that I think the people that are writing to you are insane as Bulls fans, like talking about all those players to bring back. The one thing I will say is I think personally, I don't think it's that they don't care. It's the disagreement in philosophy. They don't care and they don't see value in the second round. As a fan, I do. Like what you just said about Draymond Green and some of these other guys that have been turned out to be all-stars. When you're in a rebuild, and this goes back to the night that they traded Jimmy Butler, when you're in a rebuild, to me, it just blows my mind that you would disregard 30 other picks, 30 other players that could be picked, and you could be a part of that. The same thing went again this year. And so it goes to philosophy rather than not caring. They just clearly don't think the second round has any value. And that's somewhere where I staunchly disagree with them. Because if you're in a rebuild, you want to gather talent.
They drafted Omer Asik in the second round. They've had a couple good second round picks. The great Paul Zipser.
Paul Zipser, who were high on.
I mean, it's just.
But it's about throwing darts.
Look at the
it's about
round.
Throwing darts. And the more opportunities you're able to do that, the more times that you're going to actually end up hitting. So to me, I just think it blows my mind to say, okay, we're going to keep the flexibility of the roster space open. When you're in a rebuild and you don't really have anybody that you can point to and say, yeah, that's our guy. We've got multiple guys where we're not worried about the second round. Like, you're not at that point. I hate to say it as a Bulls fan in the first and second year of the rebuild now. You're not at that point to where you can say, you know what, we're just going to give up on the second round. Now, they did do a good job. I will say this. Even though they dismissed second round picks completely, they did a good job of going out there and finding guys to put stack on their summer league team and also to give tryouts. I like the Raleigh Atkins two-way contract sign. I liked the Antonio Blakeney two-way deal. I liked those moves. But to me, I just don't understand why they go that route and then just completely dismiss the second round. It's like contradictory to their philosophy. So that's just something that I don't understand. So to go back to our main point here, I like what the Bulls front office has done, the majority of the moves that they've made, and the transparency that they have been in the 14 months since the rebuild has started. Now, I'm hoping that continues now, but that was the biggest criticism that I think I had as a Bulls fan, was that they weren't transparent, we didn't have a direction, and they were constantly hypocritical of what they were saying.
Fine to have that opinion. I will admit this. There's no front office that keeps things closer to the vest with the exception of Oklahoma City. Right. Darnell Marbury, I had him on my show a couple weeks ago, and he kind of said the same thing. They allow their players, well, he said Oklahoma City is actually more closeted on their intentions. The Bulls at least let their press talk to the players. But the bigger point, and it's been this way for a long time, is the Bulls don't share information with national writers. And that's why they don't get love from dopes like the guy at the Bleacher Report. That's a big reason why. You ever listen to Kevin O'Connor on The Ringer? He's always talking about, I was texting this executive, this front office. Bulls don't do that. I don't want him to do it. I don't want him giving information. And that's why you see Kevin O'Connor talk about how great the Suns have been for the last 5 years when they've absolutely sucked in every draft pick and drop.
Well, Kevin O'Connor also said Lowry Markin was an F plus.
Yes, there you go. So you see, well, that's right. But I will say this. I've met a lot of national writers over the years. The vast majority of them have no idea what's going on in many towns. They pay attention to the major teams. They pay attention to the Knicks. They pay attention to the Lakers. And if the Bulls aren't good, they're not paying attention. Everybody listening to this podcast, I can guarantee you, with a few exceptions like Zach Lowe, I think I would qualify as excellent and pretty up to date on every team. Most guys don't know every team. So I don't care what the Bleacher Report says or even the Ringer or whatever the ESPN writers are telling me. For the most part, if the Bulls are contending, I'll pay attention. But they don't pay attention to the bad teams unless that GM is feeding them information. Bulls don't do it, and they're punished for it in the PR game. I don't care.
All right, well, we're coming up on an hour here, Fred, and we've had some fun, all in good fun, of course. I hope you enjoyed yourself. Let's get you out of here with this. Can we come to some kind of middle ground on an over-under wager to make for the Bulls win total this season?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I said 44-47, which I'm sure you wouldn't agree with. But, I think I would fire Fred Hoiberg if they don't win 35 games.
I was going to say 35 and a half.
Yeah, 35 and a half is, to me, a minimum expectation. And let me also say this. This was what we just did for the last hour. We couldn't be on more opposite ends of the spectrum. But this was positive. This was a positive interaction. I love debating with guys like you that love the team. Big picture, we both love this organization. I love this organization. It's brought me more joy in my life than all the other teams I follow combined. So I know I'm a little bit older than most people. I actually remember the 6 titles. But that's a fact. And Matt, you would probably agree, I assume. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
I would. I would agree.
Although we disagree on the path forward, I think overall, you know, we shouldn't dislike each other or as a fan base just because we disagree around the front office. And I think we should all be able to agree that this upcoming season is going to be pretty darn exciting with the amount of talent we have. And I'll be the first to say, if this doesn't work out, this version, and we have another bust out, it's time for somebody else to do it, Pax. You did a great job, I thought, saving me from the era of Jerry Krause. But you know, it's time to move on to other things. I think it's going to work out. I think the core of the 7 title team is already here with the big Leviathan. Those 7 guys.
Wow.
I
was going to say you are not alone. A lot of our listeners, and it's not like Jordan and I are overly pessimistic. I think realistic is the word that I would use to describe our views coming into this 18-19 season. But we get a lot of people calling in and texting and leaving us emails and voicemails who are of your like mind, Fred. So I know you take a lot of flack on Twitter from other Bulls Twitter people. And I know you take a lot of flack when you show up on Waddle and Sylvie and say, rainbows and sunshine for everyone. This Bulls team is going to be great. But I appreciate the role you play. I appreciate your optimism. And I agree. At the crux of it, at the heart of it, it is just about you loving this team and this franchise as much as people like Jordan and myself. So for that, we appreciate
you
stopping by.
Can I ask you guys one question before we wrap it up?
Sure.
So Markkanen, Levine, Parker, Dunn, Wendell Carter Jr., Valentine Portis. Do you believe that though that core 7 eventually can evolve into a title, a world champion?
No.
I would say fair no. Enough. Top three Eastern Conference team, maybe.
That's fair.
And that isn't necessarily a knock on that young group, which, like you just said, I am also very excited, also curious to see what they look like this season. But there's definitely a level of excitement there for me. It's just about the other talent that's in the league right now. And even as LeBron is exiting his prime, there are four or five other stars ready to lead teams to the top in his stead. The Warriors aren't going to be around forever, but there will be some other super team that comes along that with better pieces than these Bulls have now. And I mean, even if we reach the ceiling, the expected ceiling for all these guys, Markkanen, LaVine, Jabari somehow enters the fold and they decide to keep him and can keep him affordably, and Wendell turns into a stud and then Al Horford comp and all these wonderful things that you're talking about, I still don't know if all of their collective ceilings is enough to be a title team.
And I don't think
I would say no.
We probably need one more guy, probably. But
which is why I want us back in the lottery next summer.
Let me just say this. Anybody who does not believe in Jabari Parker, I encourage you to watch a game early April against a Denver team where that was trying to make the playoffs. I watched that whole game. There were tears in my eyes watching how talented this guy is. He is so offensively skilled. I got him as the all-star on the Bulls this year. Big surprise. I'm stepping
wow.
out and saying it.
All now. Right. Well, there's the hot take to wrap it up. Just a reminder, you can follow C-Red Fred on Twitter at CBE Fred. You can get his Bulls takes and content at ChicagoBullseye.com, including that Big Red Bus podcast. Fred, we appreciate you stopping by, man. Hopefully we'll talk to you at some point once this season gets rolling.
You guys are the best, man. I love it. Keep it going every day. All right,
appreciate it, Fred.
Appreciate it, Fred. Enjoy the rest of your summer, bud.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks again to C-Red Fred. You can follow him on Twitter at CBE Fred. Hear him on the Big Red Bus podcast over at ChicagoBullseye.com. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm not off of that channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, and our guest, C-Red Fred. We are out of here, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan, Matt, and Fred, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.